It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan. Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66. WFAN and WFAN-FM, New York.
Wow, good morning. And welcome to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, April 21st. How are we doing this morning? Hope you're hitting it straight. Back from 10 days at the Masters and this weekend watching both the Chevron Championship, the first major on the women's calendar, and the PGA Tour's RBC Heritage on Hilton Head. And Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Golf Zone Range by David Ledbetter with the latest golf technology in Little Ferry, New Jersey, and now in Westbury, Long Island. Learn golf faster. www.golfzonerange.com. Hey, I'm very excited, Ed Arzuman. I know you just got my book, but I have some really cool news for you that I have to share.
Ooh.
All right. Life on the Green, Lessons in Wisdom from Legends of Golf attained number one bestseller status in its category on Amazon.
There we go. That's what I like to hear.
I'm very excited about that, Ed. So let me know how you like it. But anyway, 12 legends in golf sharing life wisdom, you know, lessons they learned from their golf careers that they use in their daily lives. And I saw a lot of them at Augusta National. It was awesome. Jack Nicklaus, Ben Crenshaw, Tom Watson, Gary Player, Bernard Longer. Padre Carrington's in the book. I did not see him last week. But Dottie Pepper, saw her. Annika Sorenstam, saw her. Renee Powell, saw her. And Amy Alcott, Jan Stevenson. I saw Nancy Lopez as well. All Hall of Famers telling great stories, sharing life lessons. And they're also just wonderful people. And I can't believe they were thanking me for including them in the book. It's just crazy. But anyway, the biggest story in golf right now, Ed, Nelly Korda going for her fifth straight win. And how great it would be if she captures the Chevron Championship later today. A winning five straight has not been done since Annika Sorenstam did it back in 2004, 2005. And before that, Nancy Lopez, she did it as a rookie. In 1978, she won five straight tournaments. So Korda's run started earlier this year at the LPGA Drive-On Championship right in her hometown of Bradenton, Florida. She won there. Then she won the Fur Hills Siri Pack Championship in California. Then she went to Arizona, won the Ford Championship. That was her third straight title. And her fourth title came in Vegas at the T-Mobile Match Play. And so today, they're getting out there soon. Third round play at the Chevron Championship was suspended yesterday around 3:57 due to terrible, terrible rain. And at the point when play was halted, Athaya Fittipaldi had a one-shot lead at 11 under. She was 3 under through 12 holes. Brooke Henderson, 10 under with one hole to finish. And Brooke Henderson has a round of 8 under going on when play stopped. So she will return to a par 5 18th to even make some more headway if she birdies or eagles that one. So Nelly Korda, she was also a 10 under for the tournament, one shot behind Fittipaldi when play was halted yesterday. She is 3 under Korda through 11, 3 birdies, no bogeys so far in the third round. So Nelly Korda will resume this morning on the 12th to finish her third round. And Lottie Woad, the winner of the Augusta National Women's Am, she's 4 under for the championship. She's at even par through 13 holes. So you have to wonder how the weather delays will affect these players. I mean, they're all used to the elements in golf. It just takes tons of patience and perseverance to prevail. But you have the world number one in the women's, Nelly Korda, trying to win five straight. Then you have the world number one in the men's, Scottie Scheffler. He's looking to win 2 straight and 4 wins in his last 5. You know, Scheffler won the Arnold Palmer Invitational, then he won the Players. He came in tied for 2nd at the Houston Open. And of course, he won the Masters last week. And at the RBC Heritage on Hilton Head, at Harbor Town Golf Links. Scotty Scheffler, he's a human highlight show. He went home for a day and a half after winning his second Masters in 3 years. And now he's leading the RBC Heritage at 16 under, heading into the final round this afternoon. He carded a bogey-free 8 under 63. Five birdies on the front, three in the back. He birdied the 18th as well. He is one shot ahead of Sepp Straka. And Colin Morikawa, he shot a 3 under. He's at 14 under for the tournament, two shots back. Ludvig Åberg looked like he was going to go to town. He had three birdies and five holes on the front. He had one birdie on the back, a bogey, and he shot a 68 yesterday. So Åberg, he joins Patrick Rogers and Sahith Theegala at 13 under, three shots back. So Ludvig is somebody to watch, 24 years old. What an impressive game he has. And he finished second in his Masters and major debut last week. So watching Scotty Scheffler just smoke the field last week was impressive. Joining Tiger, Jack Nicklaus, and Seve Ballesteros as the only players to win two Masters titles by the age of 27. And, you know, he does everything great. He's great off the tee, approaching the green, around the greens, and his putting has greatly improved. He hired putting guru Phil Kenyon late last year. And Scotty was talking about Phil Kenyon after he won the Masters on Sunday, and he said, you know, he watched Phil coach other players. He loved the way Phil coached. He loved what he saw, that he was just open-minded. And he said they hit the ground running. And then on a podcast, the putting coach Kenyon said that they made some technical changes at the back end of last year, and this year it's been more about trying to trust those changes. Kenyon said it's less technical thought and more about tapping into Scheffler's instincts, trying to be more free in his approach. And the putting coach said, when you make changes and you're trying to improve technically, it's easy to become a perfectionist or constantly be thinking about trying to make perfect strokes. He said, we're trying to make sure he doesn't go that route. So he's trying to just be more instinctive. And Kenyon coaches Justin Rose, Gary Woodland, Keegan Bradley, Russell Henley, Matthew Fitzpatrick, Tommy Fleetwood, Max Homa. So he's a busy, busy guy, but he certainly has made a huge impact on Scotty Scheffler. And, you know, I also feel that what makes Scotty Scheffler so exceptional on and off the course is his faith, which I feel plays into his focus and mental approach to the game. He says he's defined by his faith, not his golf or his success. And, you know, that's refreshing to hear in this day and age when so many athletes and people are driven by money, 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 by that generational income, as they like to call it, the guys who jumped over to live for the riches. And Scotty, you know, went on to say how secure he feels, that his faith is the reason for that security, and it doesn't matter if he wins or loses a tournament, his identity is secure forever. And I really think that plays into his strong mental game. And, you know, that security works for him, obviously. It's not that it works just for him and not for other people, but he has the platform to talk about it. And so when people ask him the question, what defines you as a player, he answers them. And it's great to see a man of his conviction play because he loves to compete and win, and not necessarily for the millions and millions of dollars they make. Of course, you heard the rumors, which Rory McIlroy later denied, that he was about to sign with LIV Golf for $850 million and a 2% ownership stake in the league. Rory denied that in an interview on the Golf Channel. And, you know, he is very close with PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan. So I would be shocked if Rory does a 180 like John Rahm did. But I have been shocked before. But no, there's... He said it is not true, Rory McIlroy. He wants to stay on the PGA Tour. And, you know, the two sides don't seem to be very close to any agreement. And speaking of LIV Golf, three of the 13 LIV players who played in the Masters finished in the top 10. Bryson DeChambeau, Cameron Smith, Tyrell Hatton. And we'll get to that in a second, but I do want to talk about Tiger quickly. It was good to see Tiger making his 24th straight cut at the Masters. And he made it sound like, you know, despite finishing dead last, he shot a plus 16 overall. He shot that 82 on Saturday and a 77 on Sunday. He said he thought it was a good week. He said that coming in here and not having played a full tournament in a very long time, it was a good fight on Thursday and Friday. He said, unfortunately, it didn't quite turn out the way I wanted it to. He said, this is a good course. I knew going into it, Augusta National. So he said, I'm going to have to do my homework going forward at Pinehurst for the U.S. Open, at Valhalla for the PGA Championship, and Troon for the Open Championship. He said, but that's kind of the game plan. He said he's just going to keep lifting, keep the motor going, keep the body moving, keep getting stronger, keep progressing, and hopefully the practice sessions will keep getting longer. So that was Tiger. You know, hey, he's keeping a very positive outlook, and it sounds like he's planning on playing in the rest of the majors this year. So let's see how his body cooperates. And I love the fact that he went over to where Vern Lundquist was sitting on the 16th hole last Sunday during that final round of the Masters and shook Vern Lundquist's hand. And afterwards on a podcast, Vern did say that he thanked Tiger, and Tiger said to him, we're going to be tied at the hip forever because of that shot and because of what I said, meaning Vern, what Vern said about Tiger. So those were, look, there's always special moments at the Masters, and those were a few of them. But having said that, the TV ratings for this year's Masters were down. Under 10 million tuned into CBS's Masters telecast, a drop of 2.5 million viewers from last year. Yeah, I mean, Scotty had a runaway victory. He won by four. He's a quiet kind of guy. He does not light up the screen with controversial quotes. That might have a little to do with the ratings, but honestly, I think the decline in ratings is more about the way people have changed their viewing habits. You know, more and more people are streaming the coverage. And I just think overall, golf coverage is fragmented. It's sometimes difficult to follow because you have, you know, in some instances, there's coverage on Peacock, then on the Golf Channel, then NBC. With the Masters, it was ESPN, then CBS Sports, Golf Channel. And, you know, many viewers get confused and are constantly switching channels. But also, a lot of people are tuning into the Masters app. They can watch any shot of any player at any time, which is incredible. They stream the coverage, go back, watch it on demand. You know, overall, TV ratings in general for live sports are down across the board. The World Series, NBA Finals have seen big ratings declines in the last decade. The NFL is always strong, ratings-wise. NFL is huge. Obviously, Taylor Swift, I think, had a lot to do with a spike this year. But getting back to golf, I do think there is viewer fatigue. There is fan fatigue with all the division in golf. I do think all the talk about the money and the players saying one thing and doing another, you know, saying they're staying on the PGA Tour, then jumping ship, I think that's worn on golf fans. I really do. And everybody's talking about, you know, the ratings will bounce back when all the stars unite. But I'm not so sure that's the case. I really just think there are outside factors causing the declines with TV ratings. And that's their viewing habits. And also, you know, all this talk about money that these athletes make and the overall greed. I mean, average people are trying to figure out how to raise a family of four without going into debt. With inflation and the cost of living over the top. And I just think people have other things to worry about. Anyway, just a couple thoughts there. All right. We are going to talk to Ian Woosnam in a few minutes. Ian Woosnam, you remember him. He won the Masters in 1991. He was a member of eight straight European Ryder Cup teams. He captained the 2006 European Ryder Cup team to victory. We'll talk to Ian Woosnam in the next segment, and then Steve Eubanks will come to us live from the Chevron Championship. So stay where you are. We'll be right back.
Talking Golf with Ann Liguori on the Fan.
Good morning and welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori. My guest is the legendary Ian Woosman, winner of the Masters in 1991, a member of eight straight Ryder Cup teams for Europe, and captain of the 2006 European team that beat the U.S. at the K Club in Ireland. Welcome to Talking Golf.
Thanks, Ann. Yeah, looking forward to talking to you.
So you were at Augusta National last week, and tell me about the week. I know you were at the Champions Dinner as well.
Yeah, I just went up there a few days before, played a few different golf courses, and then, you know, we always have the pleasure of able to take someone on the Sunday before the tournament starts. So I took a friend around with me, and funny enough, I played quite well that day, shot 71, so... obviously it wasn't as windy as what it was when the guys were playing, but I really enjoyed that. I managed to walk around the course okay as well. But then went to the Champions Dinner, which is always a pleasure, and especially with being John Rahm as the winner, and the food was magnificent, the tapas, the steak, the fish. I had a bit of everything, and the wine. Gotta have the wine, haven't you?
I saw the photograph. It's always great to see all the champions together. And did everybody get along? That's what everybody wants to ask me. You were right in that very room, Ian. Did the LIV players and the PGA Tour players, did they all seem talkative with each other? Was there some camaraderie in the room?
The year before was probably more difficult for the guys, because it was more, things are more happening then. And yeah, I thought there was more tense the year before that. But this time, you guys were talking. It there was more stories about Seve Ballesteros. And, you know, it was his birthday that day. And some of the Spanish guys told some stories about Seve. And there's remembrance about Seve's playing in the Masters and being what a wonderful player he was.
So no juice.
No, nothing to report.
Well, John Rahm had said after Sunday's final round that he thought there was some tension between him and several PGA Tour players, but you didn't see any of that.
I suppose I wasn't in the locker room all week. Maybe there was, and I didn't see it at the dinner anyway. You know, I don't really get into that business. If I was most probably playing on the tour, it might be a different situation, but. As more of a standby, I didn't feel there was any tension.
So you were there for a couple of days, then you went back to Barbados, where you've lived for some 30 years. We'll talk about Apes Hill, Barbados in a second, where you are the global ambassador for that luxury golf and real estate community. But what were your thoughts about Scottie Scheffler's win? I mean, four-shot win. He just leads in seemingly every statistical category. The guy's unbelievable.
It was quite interesting. You could see the guys who were up there who had the ball under control, what I would say. And, you know, if you haven't got the ball under control at Augusta, you're not going to get anywhere near winning the tournament. And I think that's what Scottie's done over the last, two or three years. Basically, his iron play is so much better than anybody else's at the moment. And as soon as he gets a little bit hot with the putter, he's going to win by a margin every time. And if Caramau was calling, he was doing well with his irons, getting the ball into the right position. But fortunately for him, he just fell away a little bit. I do think one of the players who really played well was Tommy Fleetwood. He hit some magnificent irons, but he just doesn't seem to haul enough of putts. And if he wants to win a major, he just needs to putt a little bit better, I feel.
It just seems like Tommy Fleetwood is always there on the, in the final round, just always contending, but as you say, just hasn't closed it out yet. And what about Ludvig Åberg, the majors rookie coming in second in his very first Masters? That was an impressive performance.
Absolutely. You got to love this kid. You know, he hits a bad shot. He took a double and he just smiles. You know what I mean? And to have an attitude at that young, to be that sort of cool and, doesn't sort of get himself under pressure. And, you're looking at it now, with his attitude and the way he swings the club and he hits the ball, and you can only see him getting better and better. But, His main thing is the way he goes, his approach to the game of golf. He makes Ernie Els look like he's got a bad temper, you know.
He doesn't waste any time. And he decides what club he's going to hit. Then he goes up there and he just hits the ball and he executes so beautifully. And you're right. I mean, he was always smiling. He just seemed like he was having a great time. I mean, the kid, it was his first major championship. I know he's already won on the PGA Tour and the European Tour, but he's going to be somebody to watch. I think he's going to be pushing Scottie Scheffler in the future, don't you?
It's his first time there. I think he took the attitude is that, you know, I'm going to enjoy this. And, you know, it turned out, you know, really great for him. And, you know, when you play good there, if you play good at the Masters the first time, you know you're going to play well there again. So we're going to see a lot of him. Going to see a lot of him in the Ryder Cups. Well, if there's still going to be a Ryder Cup, you got to talk about that as well. And it's interesting that, you know, he could be the next superstar. But but what's so brilliant, as you say, he plays fastly. The game of golf seems to be getting a little bit faster than it used to be. They're getting on with it a bit better. And I think that's great for the kids, watching someone stand up there, you know, a bit like I used to in the olden days, is just stand there. You know what club you're going to hit. It's going to be a 5-iron or a 6-iron. You just got to make your mind up and see the shot and hit it. And that's what he's doing.
And what did you think about the conditions? I know you said you played, it wasn't quite as windy on the Sunday before, but boy, that Friday, Ian, I've never seen, having covered 26 Masters, I've never seen the wind like that. I mean, there were 40 mile an hour wind gusts and sand was flying up on the green. And I just thought it was just over the top with the wind.
It was right on the edge where, you know, I would have been interested to see what the officials were saying, where they're going to stop it. But, you know, we didn't see really much movement on the ball, maybe once or something. But, you know, if it was happening a lot, they would have stopped it. And, you know, that's what you're a professional golfer. You got to learn to play in every single condition. And that's what they had to do. And, you know, that's why the scoring was how it was and everything. But what it did is made the tournament very exciting, having that Friday like that.
We're talking to Ian Woosman, the winner at the Masters in 1991. And Ian, you beat Jose Maria Olazabal by one shot. And you and Olazabal and Tom Watson, he was 41 years old at the time, Tom Watson, but you're all tied for the lead going into the 72nd hole. What are your memories from that final round?
Well, interesting. You know, we stood on the 18th tee and I could see Olazabal in front and he'd gone in the bunker and then into the bunker up just short of the green. And I pretty well knew we'd taken five. And then Tom Watson stood on the tee for quite a while. And, you know, for me, it was either a driver or a 2-iron. And Tom decided to, he stood there for age and decided to hit three when carved it into the trees on the right. And, you know, which was, for me, it was just a big mistake, really. But that just let me, and I always had my game plan. I was just going to smash it down the fairway, and if it went on the wind, right to left, carry that bunker into sort of there's the old practice ground down there. And the hardest thing I had was trying to move the patrons to try and get a shot into the second, for my second shot. And Tom had a great second shot into the bunker where Olazabal was. Short left, and you know, I was going in with an 8-iron. I just came on the fringe of the green, and you know, it was like in slow motion because it was taking such a long time. And Tom came up and he bladed a little bit out of the bunker and went to the back of the green. And typical Tom Watson, I thought it was going to go straight down the hole. You know, it landed so close to the hole, but it bounced on. And yeah, and then I got my third shot, and you know, it's just off the fringe of the green on the left, a little slope. And I'm thinking, wow, this grain's against me. I don't want to do anything stupid here. I don't want to try and chip it and duff it. So I decided to put it. And, you know, it wandered its way up and went off to about 7 foot to the right. And, you know, Tom missed his putt and charged it past a little bit. And I was fortunate to sort of have a situation at that 7-footer. If I missed it, and you know, I was going to be in a playoff with a Jose Maria and Lanny Watkins, but I managed to knock it in, you know, right to left. It couldn't have been any better for myself. And and that was it. Masters great, champion.
Great memories. I know you were a member of eight straight Ryder Cup teams for Europe. You captained the 2006 European team, that beat the U.S. at the K Club. Boy, I remember that. The weather there was horrendous that week, but Europe prevailed under your leadership, 18.5 to 9.5. Luke Donald will lead the European team next year at Bethpage Black, right here on Long Island. And I really liked what I saw from Luke Donald in last fall at Marco Simone as the European Cup team captain. He just seems like a terrific leader, very smart, and the players really like him.
Well, I think the beauty about Luke is he's very calm and doesn't get over too excited, jumping around like some of us have done before. But yeah, and I think it's been a great move to have him do it again at Black Page because, it's going to be a bit rowdy there and jumping around. And I think he's going to be a guy who can keep their partnerships together and their attitude together. And, as I say, it's going to be a bit rowdy, and hopefully he can put his influence being calm towards the players as well.
And so, are your thoughts about the LIV players being able to play in the 2025 Ryder Cup at Bethpage?
Well, for us, we obviously were the It's a very difficult situation. We've obviously got our best 10 players who go over to the PGA Tour every year. So we have them to choose from, but it all depends. We also got to give the guys the chance to play from the DP Tour in Europe and as well. But then you obviously, we got European players who are in the LIV. And obviously, there hasn't been any agreement to let them in at the moment. My own personal feeling it should be. Some sort of way we could get them into the team, or even some of the guys who have been players have given so much to the Ryder Cup could be like the captain, like the likes of Westwood, Poulter. They've given such a lot to it. I know this is something, but I can understand going to live when you're a little bit older and taking the money, but as a younger man, it's a little bit more different. But it's if we don't see our best players playing against the Americans. Against the Americans, it just could slip away.
I know the European team will be made up from the top three eligible players from the European points list, the top three eligible players from the world points list, and then six captains' picks. And the US team's made up from the top six eligible players in the points rankings with six captains' picks. So I know Jon Rahm during the Masters press conference said he hopes to make the team based on points. I wonder if that's even possible if he's a member of LIV.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, well, only way they're going to make points is be in the majors, isn't it? Really. So, like, you're talking about three guys from the DP Tour who get in from the Order of Merit. But that's the only way. But getting on the world ranking points, our tour has gone so low on world ranking points now. So, that's going to be very difficult. You're not playing in America. You're not going to pick them big points up. So. Them, it's going to be very important for them. Six choices for Luke, I can see that, and that'll most probably come, straight from the PGA Tour. I can That's the only way I can see that really happening.
I know Rory McIlroy voiced his opinion when Jon Rahm left for LIV and said, yes, he definitely wants to see Jon Rahm on that Ryder Cup team.
Well, exactly. You want one of the best players in the world. You want him to be there. And it's as I say, I can understand it when you're an older man or a younger, older player and you come into your field like you only got another 5, 6, 7 years. It's I can understand going, but it is growing, it's getting bigger, and I just hope sometime they get it sorted so we can all get back together and play against each other because golf is about competing about the best player and you want to play against the best players in the world, and it's not happening at the moment. It did at the Masters. But hopefully in the future they can sort something out. I do hope so anyway, so for the sake of golf, really, as I say.
As they say, right? Well, I know you're having a great time in Barbados. You've been named the ambassador for Apes Hill Barbados, which is a luxury golf and real estate community. Tell me about it.
Yeah, it's obviously Barbados. It's pretty well one of the highest points in Barbados, so when you get up there, it's you can when you're in sort of like the 12th hole, 13th hole, 14th hole, you can see both sides of the island. You've got the Caribbean side, Caribbean Sea one side, and you've got the Atlantic Sea the other side. And it's a magnificent place. It's just been redesigned. And hopefully, it's a great spot for people to come on holiday, play golf, or even buy a house. And you know, so it's a great honor to be ambassador there.
And the Barbados Legends are going to be there May 3rd through the 5th. It's the first time in, what, 16 years, you were saying?
Absolutely. I can remember when I just turned 50, and that was the first time I played in the Barbados Open as a senior. And as I say, that was, you know, I'm 66. That was 16 years ago. So it's going to be great to be the ambassador of that, of the tournament in on the 3rd to the 5th. And it's brilliant. It's perfectly designed for the seniors. We'll be playing on carts. It'll be one amateur, two pros, and two pro-ams before it. It's going to be an exciting week. So if there's anybody out there who wants to come to Barbados for a holiday and a golfing holiday, come and play in our tournament.
So what led you to Barbados, what, 30 years ago?
At least, you know, I first came over here and played a little golf tournament in 1983. And ever since that, it's a British island. It was, now it's a republic. You know, a lot of British people come here for the winters because the weather's so beautiful. And you know, especially when I've got a bad back, I feel like I can come out here and it helps my back and it helps me play better. And eventually bought a house after, you know, after 10 years of coming out here and owned an house for 10 years. And, you know, my family's been, you know, my young family came here, came with us, and now we've got our grandchildren coming as well. So it's magnificent.
Ian Woosman, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to catch up. Enjoy the Barbados lifestyle, which you obviously are, the Apes Hill Barbados, and always a pleasure to talk to you. I remember that Masters victory and what a thrill it must have been for you and for all your fans, for sure.
Yeah, thank you very much, Anne, and nice to speak to you.
Thanks so much.
It's Talkin' Golf with Anne Liguori on The Fan.
Well, welcome back to Talkin' Golf, and now we turn our attention to the top female players in the world who are battling to win the Chevron Championship down at the Woodlands in Texas. And Steve Eubanks, best-selling author, award-winning golf writer, and a huge supporter of women's golf through the years, longtime friend, joins me. Steve, welcome to Talkin' Golf.
Well, thank you again for having me, Anne. It's great to be with you.
So you are at the Chevron Championship, and Nelly Korda is the story. And I know they had to resume third round play this morning, and looks like she is 3 under through 13 holes, still a 10 under overall, one shot back. Tell me what's going on down there.
Well, we had the first 3 days, it was what you would expect in Houston, hot, humid. We had you know, people were putting on sunscreen and bug spray. Then we had storms blow through yesterday afternoon. They were pretty severe. In fact, they were so severe we had to evacuate everyone from various tents, including the media center.
Wow.
Kudos to all of the staff there at the Chevron Championship who really kept everybody safe, moved them indoors, moved them off the property, got everything, you know, situated for these storms that blew through. This morning, it's cold. And it's, you know, everybody's out there playing in jackets, and we're going to, the wind's going to pick up, going to be about 20 miles an hour later on today. So it's going to be a challenge, and I couldn't think of a better way to have a championship Sunday. You've got names at the top of the leaderboard that everyone knows. Brooke Henderson went out and shot a 64. That's the lowest round in a Chevron Championship history since it moved to Carlton Woods. And if she were to win, she would become one of only three active players to win three different major championships. Anna Nordqvist has done it, and Angie Chun has done it. But Brooke is really on fire right now. But, of course, Nelly Korda is the story that everybody is talking about, trying to win her fifth in a row, including a major. I think that would be transcend certainly women's golf and perhaps even women's sports and put her on some front pages.
Awesome. And I just love watching her play. I mean, she just crushes the ball off the tee. Beautiful fundamentals. Just watching her swing, it looks perfect to me. And her speed control on the greens, Steve.
It is amazing.
It's so great to watch.
I got to tell you, if you got some golfers out there and you want to model a golf swing, don't go to anybody on the PGA Tour. You're not that athletic. Go to Nelly Korda. Watch that golf swing. It is amazing. It is as fundamentally sound, perhaps, as any that has ever been. We used to always say Mickey Wright had the perfect golf swing. I'm not sure it isn't Nelly Korda now.
Well, this year's purse at the Chevron Championship is $7.9 million. That is up more than 50% from last year's, which is crazy, right? The winner will get $1.2 million. The runner-up will get $663,000. I don't like to focus all on money, but for the women, this is huge. Even the 65th player will make some good coin, right? So
yeah.
How does this prize money compare to when you first started covering women's golf?
Oh, it's not even close. I mean, when I first came out, you know, they were struggling to have any sponsors at all. I mean, the number of events was plummeting, and the ones who were in, you were lucky if you got $1 million purse overall. Not first place prize. The total purse was $1 million. Well, now we're looking at seven times that in our major championships. And, you know, it just continues to grow at every level across the board. I couldn't be higher on the LPGA as a product right now and on women's golf in general. I think sponsors are beginning to realize that it's been undervalued for decades, and they're coming out in droves.
Well, let me ask you this. With the TV ratings, the spike in women's college hoops, obviously Caitlin Clark playing when the ratings were through the roof, and the popularity, as you mentioned, the focus on women's sports growing overall, do you think that enthusiasm has helped the LPGA? Does it spill over a little bit? I mean, maybe give us a status report on the progress with the women's professional golf.
Well, look, it hasn't hurt. Anytime a women's sport is in the news and people start to, you know, that it attracts eyeballs, that's a positive for all women's sports across the board. But in our case, we've seen steady growth. This hasn't been, you know, a unicorn where Caitlin Clark came in and everybody started paying attention. This growth began really 6 or 7 years ago and has only accelerated in the last 3 years. So I think that, you know, when you look at the overall numbers, the ratings, the, you know, the sponsorships, the number of events, the number of purses that are well over 5 million now, those things have all been steady growth and you know, continue to increase. So I think we're on the right trajectory, and people just love the sport. They love the product.
How about TV coverage? I still feel it's difficult to find TV coverage of many of the women's tournaments, Steve.
You know, in some instances, you're correct. And, well, I mean, you could find the third round right now. It's on ESPN Plus. They have featured groups out there. So those final two groups, which is the ones that you really want to see, they're being covered. So you'll be able to tune in and watch them until they're completed. Then you'll have featured group coverage for round four, as well as the round resuming at 2 p.m. On NBC. So we do have some network coverage. Look, I'm not going to tell you it's great. It's better. It's better than it has been. But always, always, exposure matters. The more network television you get, the more times you're on, you know, broadcast television as opposed to cable, those are all factors in generating a fan base. And, I wish it was greater than it is, but it is better now than it has been.
And, you know, tournaments like the Augusta National Women's AM, which is televised nationally, that's huge. And I know Lottie Wode is playing in this Chevron Championship, and she's at plus one, it looks like, through 15 right now, three under overall. But that helps as well. These young amateur women become household names by playing in the Augusta National Women's AM.
Sure. People tune in to see Augusta National, and voila, they are getting to see some really good golf from some amateur women. So, that generates a level of enthusiasm and, oh, my goodness, Lottie Wode, I've never heard of this person, and she just had this great week at Augusta National, birdied 17 and 18 to win the thing. How dramatic. People, that has carryover effect. People are going to watch the next week when she's playing in a major. So all these little things generate more fan interest and more eyeballs, which is what drives the product.
I figured Lydia Ko would be contending here. She started out well. Let's see. She's at 5 under overall for the championship. So right now she's 6 shots back. She's at -1 through 16. How's Lydia looking?
Feel great. I mean, look, I actually walked around with her a couple of rounds just to see how her game shaped up. Lydia is a lot longer now than we remember her being when she first came out. A lot of it has to do with the fact that she's older now, she's stronger, she's matured and developed in a way that generates a lot more speed. She was keeping up with Minji Lee and some other players that you think of as being quite long. So I'm high on the fact that she is likely going to win again this year, and when she does, that will qualify her for the LPGA Hall of Fame. By far the most difficult Hall of Fame to get in. I'm just excited about that prospect because she's such a wonderful human being.
And give us an update on Lexi Thompson. I know she did not make the cut. She was missing fairways. It's her fourth missed cut, Lexi Thompson, in her last 5 starts at the majors, Steve. What's going on with Lexi?
Injury. Lexi has a right wrist injury. Mm. And look, the thing about it is when you have a joint injury, it can be a thumb, it can be a finger, it can be a wrist. You know, when you hit a golf ball, that jars you. And, it's sort of like getting hit with a cattle prod. I mean, the electricity goes up through your arm and it's painful. The only way to resolve that is rest. In Lexi's case, there may be some treatment involved, but you're not going to be able to go out and practice and play. So she has to pick a time in which she can walk away from the game for a period of time and completely heal. We're not sure when she's going to do that, but when she does, she'll be back.
Well, Nelly Korda is the one to watch. Right now she is 1 shot back through 13 holes. And I saw Nancy Lopez down there. And Nancy, of course, won 5 straight her rookie season back in 78. It was great to see Nancy and Anika's playing in another event down there. And, what would the impact be if Nelly Korda, Steve, could win today? 5 straight.
Well, I think it would be, it would certainly be nationwide news, if not worldwide news. I remember when Nancy won 5 in a row. She was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. She was on the front page of the New York Times. Not the front page of the sports section. She was on the front page. I'm not sure that women's golf will now generate that kind of coverage and exposure. It's just too fractured a media environment. But it will certainly have a huge impact.
Steve Eubanks, thank you so much. Enjoy the final round of the Chevron Championship. Always a pleasure to catch up with you.
Thanks, Ann. Great to be with you.
Great to talk with you. And, I wanted to give myself some time before I sign off this morning to wish the legendary John Sterling the very best in retirement. What a lovely guy. And what a joy to listen to John and Susan through the years. John, you will be missed in the booth. Your originality, your consistency through the years, your professionalism. Here's wishing you joy, good health, and all great things in your retirement. Hey, my thanks to Steve Eubanks, to Ian Woosman, to Ed Arzuman in the studio, and good luck to Nelly Korda as she hopes to win her 5th straight title today at the Chevron Championship. Talking Golf with Ann LaGoria is brought to you by Golf Zone Range by David Ledbetter, with the latest golf technology in Little Ferry, New Jersey, and now in Westbury, Long Island. Learn golf faster. www.golfzonerange.com. Mark Malusis is coming up. Have a great week. Hit 'em straight. And I look forward to being with you next Sunday morning, right here on Talking Golf with Ann LaGoria.